Turn to 2 Samuel chapter 11. Because the first step was he desensitized his conscience. But secondly, he relaxed his grip. He didn't hold on as tight. It's kind of like, and you know, you've all seen this in the Little League, you know, the beginning of the game, you know, they're in their position, they're ready for anything that comes, you know, especially if they're an infielder. They're ready and they've got that glove there and they're looking like this. And by about the second inning, they've turned and they're throwing dandelions, you know, and they're playing out there. And they've lost their grip on their position, you know. And David, at the height of his life, had lost his grip on purity. And he was playing with dandelions in the presence of lions, in the presence of giants. Look what happens. Chapter 11 of 2 Samuel, starting in verse 1, to see the second step down. Step 1, desensitized conscience by incomplete obedience. Step 2, relaxed his grip on personal purity. And this is what he did, and it's so subtle. You see, David was a little restless. I mean, you know, he'd done everything. He'd been everywhere, had everything. He got the pick of all the women of the land. You know, he just had it all. He was a little restless, kind of aimless, kind of waiting around, a little purposelessness. He was lingering, and he stepped back from his normal place of leadership that he was expected to have. He relaxed his grip on the priorities he was to have as a king. He was one of those restless in-between times that's so dangerous in life. So dangerous. It's kind of like that little restless period between finishing school and starting into the job, or the little restlessness between retiring and kind of slowing down the life and going into the next phase of ministry. Has kind of like that little restlessness between relationships, dating and marriage. Just that little kind of dangerous spot between there. And there's a lot of these in-between times. And he's in that time. And nothing good usually occurs in those purposeless times of wandering and wondering what to do. And here's what happened. It came about, verse 1, in the spring. Here's a little note for us to understand. At the time when kings go out to battle, you didn't sit at the Pentagon and you know, become the chief of staff back then. You didn't stay in the Oval Office and send the troops. You led them. In fact, one of the reasons why the Israeli army today has been so successful is that the generals lead the way. The colonels lead the way. And that's why most of the political leaders in Israel are commandos themselves that have fought on the front lines. And they don't make dumb decisions usually because they know the cost of every deployment of soldiers. That's the way it's always been in Israel. The king went out front. The king was leading the army to war, and that's what normally happened. But look at the tragic event in verse 1. David sent Joab and his servants with him, and all of Israel. And basically, he sent all the handsome, rugged, strong men from about the age of 20 all the way through the late 40s. He cleared the land of them. Of course, all their wives were left at home. And David was there to guard all of them. And so he was on duty guarding all the women of the land while all the armies and men of Israel were destroying the sons of Ammon. But David stayed at Jerusalem. It must have been nice the first night, you know. He went around and straightened the palace and had a big meal and got the first report back that they were, Ammonites were getting destroyed. And, you know, the Ammonite king had a 100-pound solid gold crown encrusted with jewels that David was going to get when he conquered that city. And the Ammonites were the enemies of God, and it was going to be another great triumph. He was going to be able to trot up to the tent of the tabernacle and praise God. So the first night was pretty fun. But after dinner, he didn't know what to do, so look at verse 2. When evening came, and you know, David let go of his priority as a man, as a leader, as a spiritual leader, as a king. You know, as soon as you relinquish that, as soon as you say, honey, you know, I'm working too many hours, I'm so tired, why don't you just have the time with the kid? You read the Bible to them, you know, they'll be up too late. Why don't you do it? And honey, you know what, you need to rest. Why don't you sleep in? I don't need to read the Bible and pray with you, you know. You're doing so well spiritually. And men just start backtracking from their position. God says that you are the head of the home, you are the spiritual leader, you are the one that is to be out front. You are the one that's supposed to know when the kids are facing the problems they're facing. You are to be interviewing them and finding out what struggles they're going through. You're to be the one that's introducing them to each new level of their awareness of what's going on. But David just kind of relaxed that. You know, he says, that's not important. In verse 2, he begins to fixate his heart on his physical desires. When evening came, David arose from his bed. I mean, he went to bed and, you know, he had a dozen wives, but he wasn't interested in his dozen wives. You know, it just wasn't, you know, kind of midlife crisis here. And he started walking around the roof of the king's house. Now, in the ancient world, the king was on the highest point, and, you know, they always built on a hill because then the enemies were at a disadvantage. And so here he is in the biggest house, in the highest house, in the whole city of Jerusalem, and he's wandering around at night on the roof of his house and kind of looking down and checking out stuff. And, you know, he didn't look away from the temptation that he noticed as he was looking down. Rather, he engaged in watching. And this watching became lust-filled looking. And in this period of restlessness, with time on his hands, in a moment of listless boredom, a moment of wandering the palace, he uses the highest spot in the city to take an innocent peek. Look what it says in verse 2. He saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful in appearance. And so he takes an innocent peek over the wall at his neighbor's wife. Now, I have to tell you that Jerusalem this time was not that big. And so it would be kind of like, it's not that he didn't know who lived down there. I mean, the king knew his subjects. That was one of his mightiest warriors' homes. He knew whose house that was. He knew whose wife lived there. He knew who she was. But what I want to underline for you is, we need to just wait a minute and think. There's no such thing as an innocent peek at another man's wife. There's no such thing as an innocent peek at an off-color television show. There's no such thing as an innocent peek at pornographic material. There's no such thing as an innocent trying out of intoxicating alcohol. There's no innocent trying out of debilitating drugs. There is no innocent trying out of premarital sexual relationships. Those are all steps to the life-crippling habits that destroy your testimony and usefulness for Christ. There's no innocent peek at lust. There's so many that say, I'm so curious. Just check it out.